It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon. Happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Cuomo cover-up.
This is criminal.
That is the big story this Friday. A bombshell report today claims top advisors to Governor Andrew Cuomo pushed state health officials to alter findings on New York nursing home deaths. Tennessee Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn.
Now you have this loss of life, you have a cover-up that seems to be developing, and you have intentionality by the governor and his advisors to manipulate this data and to hide the facts.
The Wall Street Journal and the New York Times both claim a report last summer was changed by the Cuomo administration to cover up COVID-19 nursing home deaths.
How heartbreaking this must be to people that lost their loved ones because of the way this nursing home scandal was handled by putting these individuals into these nursing homes when they knew they had COVID, not using the other facilities that had been made available there in New York.
The memo released by the Cuomo administration last July claimed 6,400 people had died of COVID in New York State nursing homes when, in fact, the governor and his staff knew that number was nearly 10,000. Judge Jeanine Pirro at Fox News.
This is a guy who covered it up. He got people around him to cover it up, and he cannot be allowed to get away with this.
To date, the state's total nursing home deaths from COVID stands at over 15,000. And the nursing home scandal, just one of the scandals facing New York's embattled governor. The other scandal took to prime time last night.
Without explicitly saying it, he implied to me that I was old enough for him and he was lonely.
Former Cuomo aide Charlotte Bennett spoke to Nora O'Donnell at CBS News.
Did you watch Governor Cuomo's apology?
I did. It's not an apology. It's not an issue of my feelings. It's an issue of his actions. The fact is that he was sexually harassing me, and he has not apologized for sexually harassing me. And he can't even use my name.
Bennett, one of three women who've accused the governor of sexual harassment, Andrew Cuomo says he never inappropriately touched anyone. And he's asking New Yorkers to reserve judgment until after an investigation is finished.
He did apologize for the sexual harassment stuff, which, by the way, seems to be getting more press in the mainstream media than the actual 15,000 deaths in nursing homes. Listen, no one should have to endure what that young woman went through, all three of them. But this is a criminal case, I believe. 15,000 deaths and the cover-up.
Fox News meteorologist Janice Dean lost both her in-laws to COVID after they were placed in a nursing home by the governor last spring. Andrew Cuomo now facing mounting pressure to leave his post. Over 30 state lawmakers from both sides of the political aisle calling for the governor to step down. The U.S. Senate takes up COVID. That is the other big story this Friday after a reading overnight of the entire 628-page American Rescue Plan. Lawmakers began debate on the nearly $2 trillion package earlier today. Wisconsin Republican Ron Johnson forced clerks to read the entire bill, much to the chagrin of Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I ask consent to dispense with the reading.
I object.
The objection is heard. The clerk will continue the reading.
Senator Johnson says the reading was necessary so Americans can know what's actually in the American Rescue Plan. Fox News reporter Griff Jenkins.
It has some changes from the House version. For example, the Senate bill removes the $15 minimum wage increase. It removes Pelosi and Schumer's transportation projects. It lowers the income threshold for stimulus checks, offers $400 a week federal unemployment benefits, and provides direct aid to state and local governments like the House bill, but this with stipulations.
Griff Jenkins reporting. President Biden says he remains confident his COVID rescue plan will pass.
I've been talking to a lot of my Republican friends, a number of meetings with Republicans on the coronavirus bill, and House, Senate, combination of both, so we're keeping everybody informed.
The measure is facing stiff opposition, however, from Republicans, mainly over its massive price tag. Iowa's Joni Ernst.
What we are very concerned about right now is that in running this $1.9 trillion bill down the throats of all Americans and then following up with a massive transportation plan could mean higher taxes for all Americans.
If no Republicans back the bill, it'll take all 50 Democrats to pass it with Vice President Kamala Harris delivering the tie-breaking vote. A better-than-expected jobs report out today. The Labor Department says the U.S. added 379,000 jobs last month, while the unemployment rate dipped to 6.2%.
Many Americans should stand to see their personal finances improve as the job market heals, including if another round of federal stimulus legislation is passed, including $1,400 payments.
That's economist Mark Hamrick. National Guard troops at the U.S. Capitol will have their stay extended. Those troops were scheduled to leave next week, but that's not going to happen. Conservative author Candace Owens says the troops and the fences surrounding the Capitol, exactly what Democrats want.
It's going to be permanent. They will keep kicking it down. They will keep saying, you know what, now we have to have it because of this threat, because of this threat. And they are always going to be scant on details because what they want is D.C. under military lockdown. That's exactly what they're getting under Joe Biden, our most popular president ever.
Tongue firmly in cheek there. The troops were placed at the Capitol following the riots on January 6th. Alabama's Kay Ivey has bucked the trend among some Republican governors to end mask mandates in their states. Ivy has extended her mask order until April 9th.
We need to get past Easter and hopefully allow more Alabamians to get their first shot before we take a step. Some other states have taken to remove the mask order altogether and lift other restrictions.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott, meantime, defending his decision to lift the mask mandate in the Lone Star State.
COVID has not suddenly disappeared. Even though we issue this executive order, doesn't mean COVID is gone. What it means is that we no longer need government running your lives.
And in Florida, Governor Ron DeSantis pushing back claims that he's favored wealthy seniors over others in rolling out the COVID vaccine.
If you're 65 and up, I'm not worried about your income bracket. I'm worried about your age bracket because it's the age, not the income, that shows the risk.
Democrats have called for an investigation into the vaccine rollout in Florida. Former Trump advisor Stephen Miller says President Biden is helping to spread COVID with his lax immigration policies.
The majority of family units are now being released into the interior of the country, and a lot of them are going to go into communities that don't have the hospital capacity or the healthcare resources to deal with them. So this really exacerbates a public health crisis in addition to a national security crisis.
More than 100 illegal immigrants released by the Biden administration in Texas since late January have now tested positive for COVID-19. Mississippi has passed a bill that bans transgender athletes from competing in women's sports. Roger Brooks with the group Alliance Defending Freedom.
Many athletic leagues and policymakers are giving in to an ideology that simply ignores biological reality and denies equal opportunities to women.
A growing number of states have passed similar bills after President Biden signed an order on his first day in office that protected the rights of the transgender. Selena Soule ran track at a high school in Connecticut that allowed guys who identified as girls to compete against females.
Throughout my 4 years of high school, I was forced to compete against biological males. Girls across Connecticut and New England all knew the outcome of our races long before the start, and it was extremely demoralizing.
Soule says she lost several scholarship opportunities for college because of Connecticut law that allows transgender athletes to compete in female sports. Still to come this Friday, the latest Cuomo controversy, Pennsylvania getting ready to vaccinate and protecting seniors in New York.
Well, good afternoon to all. We're heading into a wintry weekend, cold, sun, and snow. But next week, it's a taste of spring. Forecast details are coming up in 10 minutes.
I like that. Thank you, Kevin Williams. Checking the stories, making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania this Friday, March 5th. The New York State Legislature will vote later today, perhaps, to strip Governor Andrew Cuomo of his pandemic powers. But critics say the effort has more bark than bite.
What we are witnessing is the peril of one-party rule in New York.
That's State Republican Party Chairman Nick Langworthy.
Andrew Cuomo's reign of corruption, incompetence, and abuse has only been allowed to go on for so long because of the culture of enablers inside the New York State legislature.
Today's vote in Albany comes on the heels of a bombshell report that claims top advisors to the governor pushed state health officials to alter findings on New York nursing home deaths last summer. Fox News meteorologist Janice Dean lost both her in-laws to COVID after they were placed in a nursing home by the governor last spring.
Putting COVID-positive patients into nursing homes, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that that's going to cause massive amounts of deaths for our most vulnerable population.
More than 15,000 nursing home residents died as a result of the order signed by the governor. Vivian Zaya, co-founder of Voices for Seniors. Her mom died last spring in a New York State nursing home.
We were being accused of being conspiracy theorists and misinformation spreaders, and here we are realizing that he's the one all along who is spreading misinformation.
Governor Cuomo also facing sexual harassment allegations on top of the nursing home scandal. One of his accusers, former aide Charlotte Bennett, spoke to CBS News last night.
So you think all this national attention may have emboldened him?
Absolutely. I think he felt like he was untouchable in a lot of ways.
At the same time, the Cuomo administration was being accused of covering up COVID nursing home deaths. The governor was writing a book about leadership. A new Emerson College News Nation poll shows only a third of New Yorkers would vote to send Cuomo back to the executive mansion next year. Here's poll director Spencer Kimball.
I don't think that Governor Cuomo is at a point where he has to resign, where he's lost all public support and confidence, but he's certainly on thin ice.
According to that poll, 54% of New Yorkers think the governor is guilty of sexual harassment. The senior lobbying group AARP is praising state lawmakers in Albany for passing nursing home reforms. This as a task force continues its investigation into nursing home deaths. Family Life's Jeremy Miller.
The organization has been urging the creation of this task force since last April. They said they are gratified to see the bill pass both houses. More than 15,000 New York nursing home residents have died of COVID since the onset of the pandemic. The organization says, quote, "What has happened in our nursing homes is nothing short of a disaster and a tragedy. It has hit New Yorkers of color the hardest. We must make sure it never happens again, and this task force is a great first step." Jeremy Miller, Family Life News.
Thank you, Jeremy. Counties across the Commonwealth finalizing plans to open up COVID-19 vaccination sites amid some supply issues.
Some weeks we'll get 7,000 doses across all of our stores. Other weeks we may not get any first doses.
Michael Lur helping to organize the vaccination effort in Cumberland County, which has partnered with three local pharmacies to make it easier for folks to get the jab.
We're hoping for at least 3 days a week starting out, and we can either back off from that or try to go every day. It just depends on how much vaccine we have and the amount of volunteers that we have to be able to administer vaccine.
Bob Dowd is director of emergency services in Lebanon County. He says they're gradually ramping up the vaccination effort there.
Until vaccine supply is there to support the operation, we're not going to open the doors. And then when we do open the doors, it's going to be limited hours at first. The ultimate goal is to run the site for 14 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Next week, teachers across the Commonwealth will start getting the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Let's pause for sports. We call it your two-minute drill.
Yeah, let's start in the NFL. Steeler legend Ben Roethlisberger will be back to play in Pittsburgh at least one more year. The team and the Super Bowl winning quarterback agreed to a new deal that will reduce his pay to $14 million from $19 million in the final year of the contract. The move lowers the team's salary cap hit by more than $15 million. Overtime says they plan to create a basketball league that pays 16 to 18-year-old players at least six figures. The Overtime Elite League will let 30 players forego traditional high school and college basketball while building their brand before becoming eligible for the NBA, and they'll pay all health insurance and allow players to earn bonuses in equity in the company. In the NBA, the Knicks beat the Pistons 114-104. The Raptors fall to Boston 132-125. The NBA All-Star starting lineups are ready for Sunday's game. Team Durant have Kyrie Irving, Joel Embiid, Kawhi Leonard, Bradley Beal, and Jason Tatum, who will replace the injured Durant. LeBron James selected Giannis Antetokounmpo, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic, and Nikola Jokic, which shocked Giannis.
That's a starting five?
Yes.
Yeah, it's over, guys. Me, LeBron, Luka, Jokic, and Steph?
Yes.
Man, that's a good stat of five.
On the ice, Matt Martin scored twice. The Islanders took down the Sabres 5-2 on Long Island. That's Buffalo's 10th loss in 12 games. Tyler Hall.
I don't think it's a system issue. I think it, you know, more of a confidence issue. I think when you're not confident as a player, as a team, the best thing to do is to simplify things.
Shocker in Pittsburgh as Claude Giroux logged two goals and an assist. The Flyers rallied from three down to beat the Pens 4-3.
I think the way we answered tonight, we're down 3-0. I think it's our first comeback win this year. So it's good to know that we can do it. And that's how we need to respond in the future.
Chris Kreider recorded a natural hat trick to propel the Rangers to a 6-1 win against New Jersey, and the Maple Leafs fall to Vancouver 3-1. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphy.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come this Friday, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way, plus March Madness, COVID-19 style.
According to a recent poll, an astonishing number of young people now identify as LGBT. What's really going on here? For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. If the last two presidential elections, the last midterm elections, and every exit poll ever conducted can teach us anything, it's that we shouldn't put too much faith in polling. Still, a new Gallup poll released last month does deserve a serious look. In a remarkable jump from prior years, 1 in 6 adult members of Gen Z, that is ages 18 to 24, self-identify as LGBT. Now, the first thing we have to do is unpack the definition of the terms used. Specifically, what does it mean to identify as LGBT? The disconnection of biological reality from one's identity makes this question particularly complicated. Is merely conceiving of oneself as LGBT enough, or must one claim it, or advertise for it, or outwardly present in some way that's consistent with a cultural stereotype? Does identifying as an L or a G or a B imply that these 18 to 24-year-olds have actually engaged in homosexual behavior? Does being a attracted to members of the same sex qualify as behavior? Or does any sexual encounter with someone of the same sex mean they must identify as gay? And the fact is, in addition to those who do experience same-sex attraction and struggle with gender dysphoria, calling oneself LGBT has become a sort of club for the disenfranchised. I've personally heard from high school guidance counselors, from teachers, youth pastors, and others, that so many of the kids who struggle socially or with depression or with just fitting in, now claim to be homosexual or transgender. In other words, it's entirely plausible, I'd say even likely, that one of the reasons so many more young adults are identifying as LGBT is because the terms aren't clear and because they're unhappy. Another crucial component to make sense of this Gallup poll is a larger observation about our culture, that we don't know what love is. The adult Gen Zers highlighted in the survey have been raised in an environment offering only two bad understandings, wrong understandings of love. For some, any time they've ever heard the word love used during their entire life, including inside the church, it's been in either a shallow and sentimental sense or in a sexualized sense. Among the four loves identified in his classic book, storge, or affection, philia, or friendship, eros, or sexual love, and agape, or sacrificial love, C.S. Lewis thought that friendship had become the rarest. Recent data backs him up. At least part of the crisis of normalizing and absolutizing sexual deviancy is that young adults lose the ability to even conceive of, much less actually carry out, true friendship. In fact, the vast majority of people who claim to be LGBT in the Gallup poll identify as the B, bisexual. How many just simply lack categories for true affectionate, loving, and yet non-erotic relationships? At the same time, trying to disconnect from our design is like trying to disconnect from gravity. Reality eventually wins. What this means for Christians is that there's actual good news we have to offer a culture helplessly obsessed, but thoroughly confused about sex. We can offer a love that reorients and transforms sexual impulse, eros, a love that orders friendship and affection, philia and storge, and a love sacrificial and self-giving, agape. And in the process, image bearers can find their true identity as created, as loved, and as redeemed by their creator. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street with Breakpoint.
It is now 20 minutes past the hour. You're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life.
and welcome back to another edition of Capital Connection. Fridays, we give you, the listener, direct connection. What's happening in Albany and Harrisburg with the experts on the issues at the state capitals. They are this week Dan Barkowiak at the Pennsylvania Family Institute and Jason McGuire with New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms. Jason, we'll begin with you and the governor's apology press conference earlier this week. This, of course, having to do with the slew of harassment allegations he is facing. Your thoughts on what he said? Is it enough to assuage the angst in Albany these days?
Well, you know, I wish we had the opportunity to show body language experts, you know, on this kind of a radio program, because by the way the governor carried himself, conducted himself in that press conference, he's very uncomfortable with where he's at right now. Mm-hmm. He's made some statements that do sound apologetic, but reminds me of a child being caught with his hand in the cookie jar and being sorry for that moment, not for the action itself. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's enough. I think the investigation that the Attorney General is conducting is going to reveal some troubling things, and where it goes from there will ultimately be up to the governor and the people of the state of New York in 2022.
Yeah, a lot of victims' rights advocates are taking issue with him saying, I did not know what I was doing at the time was wrong. They did not respond graciously to that comment. Jason, this is happening at the height of budget negotiations, and while there's an ongoing nursing home scandal as well, is he becoming too much of a distraction with these budget negotiations going on?
Well, that's the challenge. I'm not sure how the governor really can do his job right now in the face of all of the allegations and the investigations that are swirling around him. What it will mean is you will have a weakened governor who's still very powerful in budget matters, but an emboldened progressive legislature, and that's going to be the challenge for New York, because you're going to have a legislature that will do a plethora of progressive value issues, mm-hmm. and a governor who is weakened. It's going to be trouble for New York State.
Yeah, there's a nursing home crisis as well in Pennsylvania, Dan. More than half of all the COVID deaths in your state have happened in nursing homes. A lot of victims' families saying they're not getting straight answers from the governor here. The Attorney General shooting down a GOP proposal to look into COVID deaths at nursing homes. Explain the controversy, if you would.
Well, I think this week, Governor Wolf, what he admitted screams the need for an investigation. You know, he was asked a series of questions about our nursing home policies by Dennis Owens. He's an anchor at ABC 27 News. Mm-hmm. And Governor Wolf claims he was just following the federal government, what they were telling him to do. But when you look at the federal guidance, it says nursing homes can accept a resident diagnosed with COVID-19, not must. And so many states did not follow that guidance. When Dennis Owens pressed Governor Wolf on that, his reply was, I just don't know.
Yeah.
That response underscores the need for this full investigation ASAP.
Yeah, and of course, the scandal involving the former health secretary who took her mom out of a home right before that fire took off. We'll see where that goes. Today, the state legislature, Jason, is voting to rescind the pandemic powers of the governor. A lot of people say that this has a lot of bark, but no bite. Your thoughts?
Yeah, rough is what I say. I mean, that's, you know, this is going to be a difficult one, because you're going to see the media in many circles are going to say that this curtails Cuomo's powers, those special pandemic powers he had. But it doesn't. This ultimately will lead to the expansion of those powers and the extension of them beyond that April deadline. So whereas we all thought that this would mean the end of these special powers, they're probably going to continue into the next fiscal year as well.
Yeah. Charter school reform this week. The governor saying, hey, this is for the good of taxpayers. He's reining in charter schools. A lot of school choice advocates say it's a not so subtle swipe at school choice. What are your thoughts?
Well, I would think many agree that if COVID has taught us one thing in regards to education, it's that parents need more educational options. So it's pretty tone deaf when you want to further limit those options right now, and frankly, by attacking charter schools. I mean, this past year, thousands of families have flocked to cyber charter schools. You have thousands of families on waiting lists in Philadelphia, Lehigh Valley, for getting into charter schools. Yet you have public school teacher unions that are partnering with Democratic Socialists of America and demanding, you know, a slew of things and protesting in-person learning. So I frankly would say we need better leadership on education in Pennsylvania that recognizes the real problems that are facing kids and parents. and especially not limiting those options.
Yeah. Hey, if you're just joining us, this is Capital Connection. Every Friday during the noon report, we spotlight the weighty issues emanating from the state capitals in Harrisburg and Albany. Jason McGuire of New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms and Dan Barkowiak at the Pennsylvania Family Institute joining us this week. I want to spend a couple minutes, guys, on some really important legislative items from Washington, H.R. 1 and H.R. 5. Let's start with H.R. 5, the so-called Equality Act, Jason. Tom Reed from the Southern Tier was one of just three Republicans to vote for that. John Katko of Central New York, Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania were the other two. How will Reed's vote on the Equality Act affect his ability to mount an effective gubernatorial run should he go down that road?
Well, I think it's going to be devastating to that gubernatorial run that he apparently wants to do. Here's where it's going to be problematic. Remember that there will likely be a Republican primary for governor, and the primary voters of New York State generally are faith-based people that are aware of what is going on with the Equality Act, and they are troubled by Representative Reed's vote on that matter. So if there is a GOP primary, it will be very problematic for Representative Reed.
Yeah, and then there's H.R. 1. This is that sweeping new election reform bill which passed this week, Dan, with no Republican support. A lot of people fear this is going to lead to a federal takeover of elections. Democrats say it's necessary to get big money out of our politics. But in a state like yours, which featured so prominently in the 2020 election, Dan, what are your fears? I know it needs 60 votes in the Senate, so it appears unlikely this will pass. But what are your fears should this bill become law?
So H.R. 1 is a horrible bill. By nationalizing election law, it forces states like Pennsylvania to expand mail-in voting, to permit ballot harvesting. I mean, even beyond elections, it forces organizations, pro-life, pro-family organizations, to disclose personal information of their supporters. So it subjects people across Pennsylvania to harassment or intimidation. So H.R. 1, it's like six different bills lumped together into one 800-page conglomerate of just awful ideas that need to be stopped by the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, and voter ID laws gone, these independent redistricting commissions, really takes the power away from the states. Jason, Legislative Day is your big fundraiser of the year, and it's always a privilege and an honor for us to be able to partner with you on that, to make that trip to Albany each year. But hasn't happened in a couple years. Last year, because of COVID, you had to shut it down. But this year, Legislative Day is going to look different as well. Explain what's going to be happening this year.
Yeah, it is going to be different, as you mentioned. Like so many things in our world that the pandemic has changed, we still don't have access to the state capitol. So really, we're looking at during the month of April, when the legislature comes back from the budget process, is when the legislative matters that we're concerned with, a lot of social issues, will come up. And so there will be days of action throughout the month of April that will be focused on what you can do to make a difference in defending the values that we all care about among state legislators. So watch emails for that. I will be informing people about the days of action coming in the month of April.
And all that will be on your website, which we will give in just a minute. But first, let's go to Dan one more time, talk about the COVID mitigation restrictions being lifted this week, the governor dropping the travel ban, opening things up ever so slightly. How much of his decision-making on this virus has to do with science, and how much is politics driving his decision-making?
Well, I think it's being very incrementally slow in the opening, and I think we need to point this week, it was found that Pennsylvania lost 500,000 jobs in 2020, and 500,000 jobs that were gone, and what's discouraging is hearing the Secretary of Labor say we don't know the reason why they were lost or if they're coming back. And so perhaps the biggest factor in all this has been Governor Wolf's shutdown orders, and especially since the top industry that's been hurt is the hospitality sector. So it certainly needs to show a continued working with the hospitality sector businesses in helping them to get back on their feet.
All right. And with that, we are out of time this week. But as we mentioned, if you have questions about the Legislative Day events going on this year in New York, Jason, where can they find more information?
AlbanyUpdate.com.
And stay informed on the issues in Pennsylvania as well. Dan, what's your website, sir?
PAFamily.org.
They get it done every Friday. Capital Connection comes your way during the noon report. Let's stop by the Weather Center one more time. Kevin Williams.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast. A reinforcing shot of cold air will arrive with a cold front tonight. That's going to mean some lake snows and a few inches of fluff in parts of South Central New York, and more cold air for the entire region this weekend. The pattern flips next week, though. A jet stream pattern shift brings much warmer air into the region during next week. But for this afternoon, brisk and cold, sun fading to clouds. The high temperatures in the mid-20s to the mid-30s, again with a gusty wind. Rather cloudy tonight and tomorrow with snow flurries. Areas of lake-enhanced snow south of Lake Ontario through parts of western and central New York, including the Finger Lakes, will deposit an inch or two, up to 3 or 4 inches in some parts of the eastern Finger Lakes and south central New York. Low tonight, teens to near 20. The high tomorrow, 20s to near 30. But tomorrow, some morning lake flurries. Otherwise, the sun is out, but cold. Mid-20s to the mid-30s.
All right, Kevin Williams, have yourself a fantastic weekend. Finally, this Friday, March Madness fans now have a new way to cheer on their favorite basketball team during the tournament. Since capacity is restricted to 25%, the NCAA has decided to fill empty seats with cardboard cutouts. They'll be at this year's Final Four and National Championship games for $100. Anyone can upload their picture on one of those cardboard cutouts. Fans can also get the cutouts sent to their home for another $35. That is the world we live in this Friday. Thanks for coming along. Have yourself a great weekend, won't you? I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.